Hello and welcome to Press TV's debate. I'm Marzia Hashemi. Thanks so much for being with us. Is the United States more divided than ever? When the president of the country speaks disrespectfully about four sitting congresswomen and tells American citizens to go back to where they come from, what does this all mean? How did the United States get here that its president is comfortable making racist statements unapologetically? What does this say about the current affairs of the United States and its future? Before discussing these questions and more, let's cross over to Washington, D.C., joined by Press TV's Colin Campbell. Well, Colin, fill us in the latest reaction on the ground there about these racial remarks by Trump.
Well, Marzia, as you can tell, I'm not in my usual studio. I'm actually just a block away from the Capitol, where around Washington, D.C., a lot of people are talking about some of the divisiveness that has been occurring this week, not just in the White House, but also on Capitol Hill. And you ask the question, how did we get here? Where did this all derive from? Well, it's been a long time in the making, not just something that popped up overnight. If we look at Donald Trump's record, President Donald Trump's record, we could see there is a past where it has been very racist, where it's been racialized, where he's shown racial insensitivities. This could come down to the Central Park Five, where you had five men who were accused of raping a woman. They were later exonerated, but throughout their time, the due process that they were going through, the president, who obviously wasn't the president at that time, was saying that these men should get the death penalty. He even took out a full-page ad in the New York Times, a very popular newspaper here, calling for the death penalty for these five young black men. There was also an occasion where he was sued for discrimination in one of his housing suits. And throughout his presidency, we have heard him use we've heard him engage in dog whistle politics, very bigoted rhetoric, and of course, being very unapologetic about it. And this is where we are now, where we have a president who feels free to make these remarks, but also a group of Republicans who are not stepping up to him, who are not condemning his remarks in a widespread way. They're waiting to see how strategic this would be for them politically, and that's why we haven't heard a lot coming from them, particularly Senator Lindsey Graham, one of the people who was one of the president's staunchest critics, who called him actually a bigot not too long ago, is now saying that he thinks that the president's remarks recently about Representative Ilhan Omar were mischaracterized and doesn't feel that the president is as racist as people make him out to be, even though just a few years ago, that's exactly how he characterized the president himself. So here we have some Republicans that are not really showing strength and character, but are just showing how they are trying to show the latest political calculations that would benefit them the most.
All right. Well, thank you so much for that update out of Washington, D.C. Press TV's very own Colin Campbell. Well, I'd like to cross over now and welcome our guests out of Miami, civil rights activist Life Malcolm. Thanks so much for being with us. Is it a Democratic or Republican thing? Is what we're seeing just because there is a Republican now in office and it happens to be Donald Trump?
Thanks again for having me on Press TV. It's good to hear your voice, Marjorie. It doesn't seem that it's a Democratic or Republican thing. For years, as a matter of fact, since the first president of the United States of America, George Washington, there's been this divide between African people in America and the white people who run it. So, you know, George Washington was a slave master who owned people, African people who were enslaved. And so fast forward to 2019, where you have this guy who represents the same power structure, the status quo that George Washington represented, is standing on this one side where white power and people are, and right across on the other side is Africans who are oppressed. So this divide has always been here. It's not a Donald Trump divide. It's not a Democratic or Republican divide. As a matter of fact, Democratic and Republican parties are both just representative parties of the white ruling class. There's no real difference between their objective to maintain power. The difference is between the people and the Republicans and the Democrats. That's the divide. It's always been here. It's not just Donald John Trump's thing.
Well, let me turn back to Washington, D.C., introducing our next guest from there, co-founder CodePink, Adia Benjamin. Thanks so much for being with us. Adia, Trump, you know what he's tweeted about these congresswomen. and saying that they should go back to where they come from. Now, why would Trump initiate such a racist tirade against elected officials? What do you think about all of this?
It's red meat for his base. He's setting up the kind of fear and the crowds chanting, roaring, like he did when he ran for office the first time. Before it was about Hillary Clinton, remember? It was to lock her up. And now this is a new one. So I think it's part of a campaign strategy.
Campaign strategy. Well, what about that, Life? If this is part of a campaign strategy, how dangerous is this if this divide is widened and increases? How dangerous is this so-called political game that he may be playing?
That's a great question. The thing is, I don't know if it's a campaign thing, so to speak. What is true is Donald John Trump, his tongue is not fettered by the Republican Party or the Democratic Party. This guy kind of bought himself into the presidency, and so he's independent of the historical handcuffs that these political parties have had on their presidential nominee, or the, now I guess president-elect. And so Donald John Trump's able to say whatever he wants to say. It's not all of a sudden he's trying to drum up fear. He's just saying the stuff that many white people in America think, and that many presidents have been unable to say because of their tie to a political party economically. When you ask the question, how dangerous is it? The question is then for me, how dangerous for who? It seems that it's a better day for those of us who are oppressed when it is clear who stands on our side and on the side of those who oppress us. So it could be dangerous for the oppressors or the oppressed. It depends on which way this political football goes in this political game, as you call it.
Amadeus, what do you think about what our guest just said in Miami, that basically the reason why he is saying what he is saying is, unlike other political candidates who were basically tied to the money, basically needing the economic support, either from the Republican or the Democratic Party, their views were the same but could not express it. But Donald Trump can express his real feelings. Your take on that?
I don't think it's so much tied to the money. I think that he is this is his persona. And that's why a lot of people do like him, that he doesn't go by the rule books, that he's off the cuff, that he's not the kind of typical politician. And that makes him liked by a lot of people in his base. And I disagree, I think, with your the other speaker, and that I think it is dangerous because it certainly has created a lot of difficulties for these four freshman congresswomen who now need bodyguards and have had a lot of death threats. I think it makes many people in the Muslim community feel that their lives are more at danger. I think anybody who speaks out about Israel now is afraid of being labeled anti-Semitic, and it's tampered down some of the criticism. And I think it certainly creates a terrible, even greater divide within the population in the United States. And I think it makes us more disliked as a nation overseas, which, you know, might be good, you could say, because it's really the politics that people should dislike. But in general, I think it is particularly bad for this nation.
Well, Life, do you think that Donald Trump's rhetoric actually helped others in the society to basically look at things from a similar perspective, a racist perspective, whereas before perhaps they had that perspective, but we're not likely to express it because of trying to be politically correct. And now being politically correct just does not seem to be in right now. How do you assess this side of things?
I want to definitely answer that question. Before, though, I do that, I want to respond to your guest, if I may. When the question is danger, I guess danger could be in the eye of the beholder. I'm an African who lives in a country where police shoot people who look like me every day and a half. So danger one perceives might not necessarily be the same danger perceived by another. The other thing I would offer is that when somebody says it's not about the money, it's almost like people saying, I don't see color. That's a very scary thing in this capitalist society we live in. When somebody says don't, it's not about the money. But to your question, Marzieh, people for a long time have been expressing the same sentiments Donald John Trump has, just not from the president's office. You know, you've seen the guy on Seinfeld, you know, his rant. And, I mean, you actually had Negro leaders come out and bury the word, what we now call, to be politically correct, the N-word. You know, they had an actual funeral for it. And in response to these, as you put them, racist statements and expressions being spewed throughout media and in popular culture by people who were deemed to be important by society but not necessarily as important as a president. So, but now that the president is doing it in such a brash fashion, of course people who have always held these sentiments but had hesitation, were reticent to express those ideas, feel emboldened by this guy saying whatever he wants to say.
And life is, in your perspective, is that better or worse? There have been different people that I've talked to, especially African Americans, on this, and they say that actually we want to see the reality. We don't want people actually smiling in our faces and saying the N-word under their breath, but it's better, they want to see the reality of what people are thinking. Your take on that, life?
That's absolutely correct, Marzieh. I remember when I was a child, I had the black and white television with the little knobs. You can turn the contrast, and the blacker you make the blacks and the whiter you make the whites, the crisper picture you get. And so that's where this type of rhetoric is doing, this tone that Donald John Trump has set for this country by forcing people to choose one side or the other, the side of the oppressed or the side of the oppressor. It makes the picture clear for those of us who are engaged in this very critical battle for freedom.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, Madea, how do you see it all? Do you see this as a deterioration in the society? Do you see this as really this divide getting wider, or do you see it as something that's just always been there, but now just showing itself a little bit more, of course, with the okay of the highest political office in the land right now?
Well, certainly it's always been here, but the different levels of crisis go up and down. If you look at what's happening on our border, while Obama was to some of us considered deporter in chief, there wasn't as much hatred towards immigrants as I think we're seeing today because of Donald Trump. And I think that while people in the immigrant community have always feared being raided and deported, there were some gains made, especially for the younger immigrants, the ones called the Dreamers, that had secured the ability to stay here until Donald Trump came and turned that around. So I think, well, from the perspective of the black community, it might be a positive thing to bring out into the open what has always been there. Maybe in other communities like the immigrant community, it's creating a starker situation that is making it harder for immigrants to gain access to the United States and to stay here once they've managed to get inside.
Well, life, how do you see it? Do you think that what is playing out actually the U.S. Under Trump, kind of a microcosm of the overall perspective that Washington has towards other countries in general, thinking that European roots are superior. And this is actually the real problem, that imperialist perspective exhibited abroad is also being shown at home.
Absolutely. So in my view, the thing is not enough just to say that immigrant people are attempting to get into the United States and having problems staying in the United States if they're able to get in. What needs to be said is that those of us who stand with oppressed people, we have to say we stand in solidarity with others who are oppressed. That's why you never hear me say the black community or this kind of thing. I talk about the oppressed and the oppressors. And so what has to happen is that those of us who are oppressed need to organize ourselves under with that solid idea that it's us in this thing together. And in so doing, it becomes a null and void that some people are seen to be immigrants and others are not. What becomes important is the resources of the peoples of the world is in this country held hostage by the United States, and people are coming to this country to get the resources back, and either we are with them or against them, and we have to choose a side. That's what's important.
Well, isn't that a big part of all of this, Medea? It's perspective, because on the one hand, we talk about the immigrant community and of course, with Donald Trump and how he has talked about these people of color who, of course, they are all Americans. But there's one way of looking at people, brown and black people, and another, white, or those with European roots. So you think that Donald Trump would have made the same type of comment in dealing with a white congressman or white congresswoman?
Oh, no, I don't think so at all. I think that's why we can say unequivocally that he is a racist and his comments are racist. He would not have said the same thing to a white congressperson at all. And I do think that he has intensified the issues that already exist. And I want to give another example, and I think that's the Muslim ban. The fact that he has made it nearly impossible for people from certain countries to come to the United States because they are Muslim countries, and not because they have anything to do with having creating a greater risk of people in the U.S. getting attacked by them, is something that has furthered the division inside the U.S. And the hatred that he stirs up for people against the Muslim population. So I would say, yes, these things existed, but when you have a leader who is in power, not just the society in general, but somebody in the White House who holds these racist, sexist, anti-Muslim positions himself, he is able to use the bully pulpit, just like he does with his rallies, to whip up this sentiment. And I do think that becomes more dangerous for this society and harder to move forward.
Well, staying with you, but I just want to expand on what you said, because isn't it really a continuation? If we look at U.S. policies, you talked about Muslim people, so let's talk about Muslim countries. And we see, and it's not something that started under Donald Trump. I mean, we look at the Bush administration, Obama administration, and we see the policies that cause so much havoc throughout the world, but especially in the Muslim countries. We know the famous or infamous 7 countries in 5 years. Isn't it all part of the same, that when you have that mentality that you can go in and destroy these countries for whatever reason, based on because of natural resources or because of what you call strategic interests, that you can kill these people so easily? So isn't it natural that we would see this type of reaction from the President of the United States? Because overall, that's the overall perspective, that Americans are better than those in this part of the world.
Well, you know that this country is one that was born on genocide of Native Americans, on slavery, and then constant invasions of other countries, except for the world wars, mostly countries where people are of color. And if you look at Vietnam War and move forward today to all of the invasions to the Middle East, it's almost always people of color that are being invaded and killed. And yet, there is this perception that here in the United States, we're supposed to all get along and we're supposed to give the same rights to everyone. That's the kind of thing that Obama had said while he continued a lot of these wars overseas. But I think with Trump, you don't get that disconnect. You continue to have the U.S., quote, exceptionalism, and the military occupying other countries, I would say, for their resources. But you don't get the same, we're one big melting pot here at home. You bring those same differences into the open, like your speaker was saying. I think on that I would agree. But I do think that we have to talk about the level of animosity once that becomes something that's talked about and acted upon openly in the United States. Obama would not have had a Muslim ban. He would not have been so open and direct. And let's face it, he was a person of color. Trump does that, gets away with that, and I think fans the flames of division in the process.
And Life, where do you see all this going? What do you think needs to happen in the United States?
Again, the only answer is organize. Those of us who are freedom-loving people, those of us who care about justice, those who find the situation in which we live in the United States intolerable, unlikable, and we want to do something about it, we have to organize and change the world ourselves. I mean, of course, these conversations are good and informative, but the information, possessing the information, is not enough. We have to take this information and use it to change the things about this country that we do not like. And so that's what has to be done. We have to continue to discuss in such a critical way whether Donald Trump's rhetoric is dangerous, or whether he's some kind of racist or just a truist. You know, whether he's in fanning the flames or just repeating what everybody knows, but very few people are scared. Very few people have the courage to say. So okay. We just have to organize in response to whatever it is Donald John Trump and his administration is doing. We just continue to organize for our own freedom.
Okay, and on that note, we will end. But interesting words. Basically, is he fanning the flames, or actually reflecting a reality? We're keeping our eye, of course, very close on that story. Thanking both of you for being with us. Co-founder of Copink, Medea Benjamin, Washington, D.C., and U.S. civil rights activist Life Malcolm out of Miami. And as always, viewers, we appreciate you being with us for another debate. I'm Marzia Hashimi, signing off for myself and all the crew right here in Tehran. Thanks so much, and hope to see you next time.